I think there's this real challenge, like of a both and, when we say that there's lifestyle factors that can influence the likelihood of having a headache, we have to be very careful that we're then not putting all of the blame and guilt on people when there are when attacks happen and when migraine happens, because migraine is a disease and sometimes attacks happen and you're doing everything right and you can't explain it. And so I think it's very important to recognize that balance.
If you live with migraine, you've probably heard that lifestyle plays a role in managing your condition, but that advice can quickly turn into a list of impossible rules: perfect sleep, no stress, a restrictive diet, and it can feel like another burden on top of the pain. But what if the goal isn't perfection? What if we focused on small, sustainable changes that can make your nervous system more resilient and better equipped to minimize migraine? Joining us today is Dr. Rebecca Wills, founder and director of the Comprehensive Headache Program at Wake Forest and a leading expert in integrative medicine. Dr. Wills is here to help us cut through the noise and find those truly impactful small steps that can make a big difference. Dr. Wills, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here today.
When you talk about lifestyle medicine, Dr. Wills, in your headache practice, what does that actually mean?
That's such a great question. So let me begin in saying that there is an entire field of lifestyle medicine and through the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, where clinicians can actually become certified in lifestyle medicine. My background is in integrative medicine. And when I was coming through medical school, the terminology was even like holistic medicine. The terminology has changed over time. Some people, at one point, we called it complementary and alternative medicine. Now it's sort of complementary and integrative medicine. But the idea is that our bodies want to get better and our bodies want to heal. And there are lifestyle factors that can influence the healing and improvement of the health of our bodies. And so when I think about lifestyle medicine, I think about integrative medicine and modalities of things that we can do to improve our health without medications specifically. And in fact, when we think about this, we can think about the things that we do every day, the day-to-day activities of our bodies to nourish ourselves, to move our bodies, to restore our health, and to manage disease. And so in general, when we think about lifestyle medicine, we think about things like nutrition, exercise. And with exercise and with nutrition, there's movement, and with there's fluid intake. And then also we think about with that sleep is so important. And then also sense of purpose and community and are all key factors. Stress and the way that we manage stress. And then with specific lifestyle medicine, there's also sort of the idea of avoiding unhealthy sort of substances like drugs and alcohol. So in general, the idea of lifestyle medicine and integrative medicine is using modalities of ways to influence our health without medications that incorporate all the aspects of our day-to-day lives.
So it sounds like this really rests on the principle of our bodies innately having the ability to do a lot, wanting to do a lot to keep us well, and then tuning in through a lot of different avenues to ways to support our body in best being able to do that.
Exactly. Yes.
So the acronym SEEDS, sleep, exercise, eat, diary, stress, often comes up in migraine care. Do you find that helpful, or do you use any kind of different framework to help patients set priorities in this area?
Yes. So SEEDS is a fantastic acronym. And I think, you know, it came about with several headache specialists. And so I think it is especially powerful because you think about seeds is something that you plant in the earth and allow to grow over time. It's like a nourishing factor. There are other acronyms that some people use. So another acronym that some people use is FAST, which is fluids, activity, sleep, and trigger management. There's another acronym that some people use called SMART, which is sleep, meals, activity, relaxation, and trigger avoidance. So Whether you want to go fast, whether you want to be smart, whether you want to nourish with seeds, I think all of the acronyms all sort of come down to several key elements: activity, nutrition and fluid intake, sleep, and sort of stress management and mechanisms to target stress management. What's interesting is several of those acronyms also include like the concept of triggers or trigger management or trigger avoidance. And then also one of them, the seeds, has the diary, keeping a headache diary. So whichever acronym works best, you know, I think they're all fantastic, because the idea of an acronym is allowing us to focus in on the key aspects of our own well-being that we can target. And so you might resonate best with one of them. Whichever one works best for you is great. In general, you can think about, okay, what can I do? Because I think a big piece of lifestyle medicine and also in managing migraine is, what do I have control over? You know, what can I do in my day-to-day life that I can control that's going to increase the likelihood of health and decrease the likelihood of having an individual migraine attack or to experience the suffering and the debilitating pain and other symptoms associated with migraine? And so lifestyle factors and what we do day-to-day can impact migraine, and patients can have control over whether or not individual attacks happen.
And I think that's really helpful to think about things in terms of modifiable and non-modifiable. What can we control and what can we not control? Sometimes what we can't control is so overwhelming, but to shift that focus to what we can and trying to really own that is empowering.
That's right. And one of the things that I've discovered is really important, and I always have to emphasize this when I talk about lifestyle factors, is that yes, there are a lot of things that you can control that will decrease the likelihood of having individual attacks. However, migraine is a disease. We think of it as having genetic susceptibility. So individuals who have migraine attacks are prone to having attacks. And one of the things that's really important is, by me saying that you have control with these lifestyle factors, is not me saying that when you have a migraine attack, it's your fault, or what did you do wrong, or you must not have been doing X, Y, and Z. And I have even had a patient who one time said, you know, she was telling a family member about her migraine, and her family member said, well, what did you do? Like, what did you do to cause it? And so I think there's this real challenge, like a both and, when we say that there's lifestyle factors that can influence the likelihood of having a headache, we have to be very careful that we're then not putting all of the blame and guilt on people when there are when attacks happen and when migraine happens, because migraine is a disease and sometimes attacks happen and you're doing everything right and you can't explain it. And so I think it's very important to recognize that balance, because otherwise, if we say, oh, you have all this control and then a migraine attack happens, then you think, or, you know, it's very easy to then assume that I must not have done something right. And that's not the case.
That it's not failure. A migraine attack isn't failure of something that you did or didn't do. It's a condition you have that presents itself sometimes. And what we're trying to do is see how often we can minimize the impact through the things that we can control, which is not everything.
That's right. That's right. And the lifestyle factors decrease the likelihood of an attack. It doesn't erase the presence of the disease.
Right. Well, to that point, I think a lot of people with migraine have heard or felt at some point the idea that they're not managing stress well, and stress can cause migraine attacks, when in fact we know stress is not a cause of migraine, not a cause of having migraine, but can be one of the triggers of attacks, and in fact is a very often one of the most commonly reported migraine triggers. Avoiding stress, however, in life, obviously, is not realistic. You have facilitated a lot of very important research in this area, including on mindfulness. And I'd love if you could share a little bit about what mindfulness is and what you've learned in that area.
So what's actually more important is the way that stress is managed, the way that we respond to stress. And I like to think more of sort of regulation. And one of the things that we are starting to understand, and we've often thought, you know, what is it about stress? Like, you know, stress is the number one reported trigger for migraines. So what is it about the stress that sets off headaches? Like, I want to discover this. I can't wait to figure this out. But one of the things that's interesting is cortisol is a stress hormone, and it's released in the body when people are experiencing physiological stress. And what's important is recognizing that some of the research in headaches suggests that it's not whether you have cortisol or not in your system, but it's the rise or the fall of that cortisol level that influences the likelihood of an attack. So like it's the coming up and the coming down and the rate of change of that. And so practices that allow us to modulate, to change our response to those stressors can potentially create more of a steady state in our body. And so that's where practices like mindfulness may be especially helpful because, you know, mindfulness is the practice where there's different features of mindfulness, but one is the actual mindful practice, like mindfulness meditation, where you can sit comfortably, often focus on a sensation like the breath and focus your attention on the breath. With non-judgment and a sense of curiosity. Being mindful is being in the present moment and being able to be present.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass.
Now, for some of us who are newer to these terms, can you clarify what the difference is between mindfulness meditation and mindfulness meditation?
I'm glad you asked. This is great. Okay. So meditation is typically thought of as an active state of being where individuals often, there's different types of meditation. There, you know, there's like different varieties and variations, just like with yoga, like there's all these different types of it. But in general, with mindfulness meditation, there's often a focusing on a sensation like the breath. So there's a focused attention piece to mindfulness meditation where there's a focusing on a sensation like the breath or, you know, a visual imagery or something. And breath is often most commonly used because we all breathe. And so there's a focusing on the breath, and when thoughts come into the head, which they will always do because we're human beings with cognitive brains, when thoughts come in, to gently notice them and let them sort of float away and return the sensation and focus back to the breath. There's also with mindfulness meditation an awareness practice where you can sit and instead of focusing on the breath, you're mindfully noting what's in your present state, whether it's smells or other sensations or what you're hearing or what you're seeing and just noticing. So that's an active practice where often people can do it. Now you can practice mindfulness meditation very concretely sitting. You can do walking meditation. You can do movement. You know, yoga is a form of a meditative experience if you use it as such. It can be used in exercise too. So, but mindfulness meditation can come in a variety of forms. And then meditation mindfulness meditation is a type of meditative practice. Then there's the state of being mindful, and that is being in the present moment and being in this non-judgmental state of just noticing things.
What would be a good way for someone to start a practice of mindfulness or meditation? Maybe someone who hasn't explored that area yet or might think, I'm not good at that if they've tried in the past, that's really realistic and achievable.
Now, my recommendation for mindfulness is often to begin with a class. In the past, almost all the classes were in person, and that often came with challenges. But now there's so many online classes people can take. There's so much increased access and availability. One of the things that we often see when people start practicing strategies like mindfulness is that initially, stress can increase. or I should say, the perception of stress can increase. Because often in our day-to-day, busy, full lives, we're dealing with a lot of stress. And sometimes when you slow down and you start noticing it, the stress in your life hasn't changed, but all of a sudden you're more aware of it. And so I often recommend taking class with a teacher so that there's space to ask these questions and to try to figure this out and to relate and how do I fit this into my life and to sort of ask and answer these questions, I think is really valuable.
So let's touch on sleep, nutrition, and exercise, each of which we have interviews dedicated to this year, actually. Let's start with sleep. We often worry about getting a great solid 8 hours of sleep every night, which in and of itself can create anxiety, you know, if it's a challenge. In your experience, what's the single most powerful change related to sleep, whether a consistent bedtime, a consistent wake time, total duration, or something else?
I wish there was like one fix all answer. I think what's important is prioritizing sleep. So actually recognizing the value of sleep. And it's kind of ironic because in our culture doesn't really value sleep. We value productivity. And so shifting to prioritize that sleep is important. And then once you prioritize sleep, then you can do all the strategies. There's some research now to suggest that people may have an onset of a migraine attack, and that onset of a migraine attack will disrupt sleep. And it's during that prodrome period before the pain has begun. And then the next day, the person's like, God, I got horrible sleep last night. That's going to set off a migraine. And in actuality, you didn't set off the migraine had already begun. And so that's another piece to this guilt of like, oh, I didn't get good sleep last night. It's my fault. Now I'm going to have a migraine. Of actually, maybe the migraine had already started. And so I think we're actually moving in a new space with research around sleep and all of these lifestyle factors, but especially with trigger management, because we're starting to see not just with sleep, but with other factors, that it's possible that the migraine has begun and that before whatever diet or sleep or other things are taken in. And so, for example, with diet, you know, we used to have this huge long list of foods to avoid that don't trigger headache, you know, and for many people, that's really powerful. And many people have found specific foods that set off an attack every single time. There's some research to suggest that it's possible that a migraine attack begins and it's in the prodrome, so there's no pain, but people might have food cravings and lead them to eat chocolate or other things. And so the migraine has already begun before the intake of the food that then seems to be the trigger for the headache. So it's not actually triggering the headache. It's just part of the experience of the migraine.
So it may not be the chocolate that triggered the migraine attack. It may be the attack was in progress, perhaps in a pre-pain prodrome phase, and you craved chocolate. I take a lot of comfort in that as a chocolate lover.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, but again, we're in the early phase of understanding all these nuanced differences. In general, it's shifting from sleep to nutrition. You know, my recommendation for nutrition, we've got all, I can't wait to hear the experts speak on nutrition and diet and migraine, because I think there's huge impact of diet and nutrition on migraine and all these different diets, which one is best. In general, what I recommend is fresh fruits and vegetables, focusing on fresh, healthy, avoiding processed. And so really focusing, which again, in our culture, you know, is challenging. And so again, it has to be a priority of really focusing on fresh fruits and vegetables, staying well hydrated, water, limiting caffeine, you know, all of these factors that are important, not just for migraine, but for overall health. When people are prioritizing their health and well-being through diet, nutrition, exercise, sleep, their overall health and well-being reflected through migraine will improve as well.
You touched on exercise, Dr. Wells, and I mentioned that we'll have an interview on exercise this year, and that was really dedicated to the idea of how to pursue movement when exercise can be a trigger for some people living with migraine. How do you coach or advise people with migraine about the role of exercise in their lives?
Great question. So there's different pieces to exercise. You know, there's like going to the gym, there's going on a walk, there's moving. There's different things in terms of exercise and sedentary behavior, you know, and moving your body or sitting in a chair all day. The thing that I find most important is with exercise, I often ask people, what do you enjoy doing? Or what did you do when you were a kid? Because we know that if people do what they enjoy doing, they're going to do it longer and stick with it. And it's so easy to start a new exercise program and do it for a day, a week, a month, and then, or a year, and then it's done, right? And migraine is a disease that typically can last an entire lifetime. And so we're not talking about something you do for a day or a week or a month. We want to incorporate exercise and movement into something that's long-term and not a quick fix. And so I find that asking people to reflect on what they do that they enjoy, or what did they do when they were a kid and there weren't all of the constraints of adulthood, that because when people find things that can fit into their lifestyle that they enjoy, they're more likely to do it. Like, is there one exercise that's the perfect migraine exercise? I don't think so, because there's no one exercise that's perfect for all human beings.
Mm-hmm. I love that, that idea of movement connecting to your joy and how much more motivating that, of course, is. So outside of stress, sleep, nutrition, and exercise, what other lifestyle factors do you find most meaningful in supporting migraine management?
I think one of the most important things that we don't talk enough about in migraine is self-compassion. You know, we did this study and where we interviewed patients with migraine and asked about how does migraine impact your life? And we were really shocked at how much people describe the impact that migraine has on lives beyond depression, anxiety, in terms of their well-being, you know, in terms of guilt, stigma, feeling bad about themselves. We had one patient who said, something's wrong with my diseased brain. Like, what is wrong with my brain? And I think, again, coming back to this feeling of guilt and burden, we're burdened to other people. We can't be the friends that we want because we're not reliable, because I have these unpredictable attacks that happen. So that self-compassion piece of taking the space to give yourself grace and to practice that self-compassion piece is so important. There was actually a great study that was recently done out of the Turkish headache study group. And I hope one day I'm going to meet this group, because they've done some really cool research. And they actually looked at self-compassion in patients with migraine compared to healthy controls. And they actually found that there was a decline in self-compassion in patients with higher migraine attack frequency. And so they sort of came to the conclusion that increased migraine severity may negatively impact patients' emotional resilience. And so, you know, as migraine attacks become more often, you know, one of the things that may happen is the increased guilt, increased stigma, increased frustration. And that practice of self-compassion, of giving yourself grace, is really, really important. I think as a field, we have a long way to go to understand how we can enhance self-compassion in our patients with migraine.
Oh, I really appreciate you bringing that up. I think this is really fascinating. I think about how much I have had struggled for many years with this kind of idea of feeling less than I could have been in all of these different roles in my life, and feeling disappointment in that, and not realizing over time that had translated a little bit to almost disappointment in myself. And if I heard that in one of my colleagues with migraine or one of my friends with migraine, I wouldn't be able to believe it because such extraordinary, people. But it's a little bit heartbreaking to think about just what could gradually happen over time and the idea of looking at that purposefully and pulling in the very necessary aspect of self-compassion. I think that's a fantastic thing to have introduced and to focus on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think as a society, like we need more self-compassion. And I think with the disease of migraine, it's so important because there's so much stigma against it. Yeah. And so targeting, enhancing our ability to like give ourselves grace, I think is very important.
Yeah. What about things like social connections and sense of purpose as part of the whole lifestyle medicine approach to comprehensive migraine management?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is really important. And I think it's an area where some other fields have done some great research. Like if you look at aging and the sense of loneliness and the impact, we now know what an impact loneliness has in the aging world. But what does the impact of connection have in the migraine world? And that, Migraine World Summit gives an opportunity for connection. And so actually bringing people together into community, especially other people with migraine, is very empowering because people do not realize they're alone. And I think that's a really very important piece. And so I think that we need to do some more research in the field of migraine to understand the impact of community, to understand the impact of both within the field of migraine, like community with others with migraine, but also, like you said, that those connections, connecting with other people. And that's one of the aspects that migraine takes away. You know, some people with migraine not only will say, migraine attacks are so disabling that I can't do things, but because I've become so unreliable, I stop planning to do things. And so then all of a sudden you're not connecting with the people in your life and with others in your life that are important to you. And that's so sad. And that's the disease taking away something that's really important to health and well-being. Purpose in life and life satisfaction, I think, are really important factors in overall health and well-being. And I think we've got a lot of work to do to understand all the nuances of how important that is with migraine.
What gives you hope when it comes to helping people use these lifestyle medicine or lifestyle factors to better manage migraine?
I will tell you, research gives me hope because we are discovering more and more every day and every year with migraine. And it makes me so hopeful that we have so much more to discover. And historically, there hasn't been a lot of research in the field of headache. And the fact that we have more research now gives me so much hope because we're discovering so many things that are so important. And every time there's a new discovery, it's validating. Sometimes we scientifically understand something that people with migraine have been experiencing for a really long time, and they thought they were crazy. And now we can say, oh, this is why you're having that. You're not crazy at all. And you can tell your friends and family, this is what's biologically happening. So I think research makes me really hopeful. And speaking of research, we currently are conducting a clinical trial in adults with migraine. That is actually, the entire study is online, and it involved 8 weekly classes where people learn more information that may help their migraine, and anyone residing in the United States may be eligible. So in the notes section of this interview, we'll have a link for that clinical trial. It's called Be Well with Migraine: Brain Education and Wellness with Migraine. And it's a study that we're really excited about because it's online, so people can do it from the comfort of their home, and anyone residing in the United States can participate. And we're just very, very excited to be able to conduct this research to better understand so many of these things we've been talking about today.
Well, that's really exciting. Thank you for sharing that. And as you mentioned, we'll have links available for everyone to learn more and potentially participate. And thank you also for pursuing that and all of the research that you have mentioned that is a cornerstone of all of the progress and the hope that we have for the future too in migraine and headache medicine. We all owe a lot to you and all of the other practitioners and researchers who are advocating for improvements and advancements in this area.
Thank you. Thanks.
Dr. Rose, where can people learn more about you in addition to the study and the work that you do?
Great. We can give you a link to where you can find information about me. I'm at Wake Forest University School of Medicine, Atrium Health, Wake Forest Baptist. I've been here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina for over 12 years, and I'm really excited to be here and to doing this work.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Wells, for again joining us on the Migraine World Summit. You've really helped us here in this interview home in on how small, consistent steps in lifestyle medicine could really additively or individually be very important parts of our comprehensive migraine management. And for that, we're very grateful. So thank you so much again, Dr. Wells, for joining us.
You're welcome. It's an honor to be here.